What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast pondering whether Bromley v Leicester or Lincoln v Spurs is the more unlikely EFL fixture. Coming up, we'll chat on all the ups, downs and titles that have been achieved or otherwise since last we spoke. Powered by QueenBet. This is What the EFL. And we just had to leave it a little later than normal to bring you our show this week because so much has happened over the last couple of days of midweek action. So we're going to have a bit of a breezy sweep through everything that's happened in the Champ League One and League Two. I've got my two boys with me to talk through it all, of course. Adrian Clark's been all over the Championship this midweek. You okay, Clarky?
Yeah, all good, all good. My two boys. I mean, you are actually younger than me.
So, I know, but I usually say podcasting pals, and I just thought to myself, I always say that. So what can I go with instead?
Fair enough.
Sam Parkey's back with us 2 days before you stag do. Sam, are you going to phone this one in then?
No, I'm going all in, mate. Got a couple of days to go, haven't I? I'm motivated to finish strong and then just leave the phone. I hope she's not listening. Just leave the phone somewhere and just not even look at it for 72 hours.
Glad. Like it. All right, before we get going, let me remind you, our partners QueenBet have an offer where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, QueenBet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least 1 bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+, and for new UK customers only, visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Right, let's get going then. Before we get to the action, thought it was worth a mention that Championship clubs have snubbed the chance to introduce a light version of VAR for next season. It was called Football Video Support. It's a variation of what we see in the Premier League. It requires fewer resources and gives each coach 2 reviews per game. It could have been brought in from the start of next season. We are still going to get goal line technology, and there's going to be a vote in June to extend that into League One. Adrian, rejoice was my first feeling when I heard this news. We don't want VAR or VAR light and coach reviews in the Championship, surely?
No, I don't think so. No, I mean, if you look at the surveys, I mean, in terms of Premier League fans, I mean, 75% of Premier League supporters of Premier League clubs don't want it anymore. So I think that speaks volumes. What I will say is that this FVS system, which I believe means you can challenge goals or no goals, penalties or no penalties, direct red cards or mistaken identity, I would much prefer that version of VAR in the Premier League. I have to say, if that's something that they're willing to sort of look at, then maybe they should ditch the current version in the top flight and give that a go. But no, I've got no beef at all with the Championship and the EFL clubs for making that call. But I actually think having 2 challenges might make it a bit more fun and hopefully a bit more slimline in terms of support for the refs.
Challenges feels a bit too tennis-y to me, Sam. I like the goal line technology thing, though, and I wonder why they don't just roll that out into League Two. I mean, maybe a costing, but surely the EFL have got the money to pay for that.
Yeah, quite possibly. I don't know what the reasoning would be behind that. Probably with Clarkey, actually, first time today. In the Premier League, I think that would cut out the, or they cut out, it would cut out the amount of times that it seems to go to VAR, the amount of scrutiny that the officials are under. It would probably simplify it to a degree. What I read this morning said that maybe it would actually be a little bit more time consuming, considering teams would have 2 of these appeals at the moment. On average, there's 2 reviews per game in the Premier League. But I suppose it's just those little small ones that seem to take an eternity. And, you know, me and you, Matt, have sat side by side in commentary boxes and had games ruined. I'm sure we could name 1 or 2 now because of the amount of appeals. Was there a game? Where was the one that you always name check, Matt? There was one. Was it a Spurs? There you go. Chelsea away at Spurs, where there was something like 15 in the first half or something ridiculous. And yeah, from a selfish point of view, I think it makes our job a hell of a lot harder, for one. Sometimes that kind of dead air, unable to feel, unknowing when to come in, what's going on, should we speak, should we not, it's a nightmare for the fans. And I'm a purist, ultimately. I never used to take refereeing decisions home with me too often. I didn't want it in the first place, and nothing has changed my mind. You moan at the ref, you go home, you forget about it, tomorrow's another day.
My only fear with the challenge as well, Matt, would be that managers would just automatically do it, especially if it was late on in the game. It'd be like, even if they thought that's a perfectly good goal or a perfectly clear penalty, they'd just review it just in case. And that would be a shame. That would sort of taint, you know, and drag things out unnecessarily, wouldn't it? So, yeah, maybe. Yeah, I just think the EFL have got this right.
Mm. Good on them. Somebody who hasn't got much right this season, or maybe anything, are Leicester City. They have been relegated, pending a big West Brom points deduction, I guess, after their 2-2 home draw against Hull on Tuesday. Clarkie, you were in attendance for this one, which I think they were probably grateful for, because it boosted the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, look, I couldn't believe how, well, I could believe it, I suppose, given the season they've had, but I've never seen the King Power so empty. Looked like a pre-season game. You know, it was, you know, there was almost as many empty seats as filled ones. It was sad, actually, really sad to see. Obviously, 10 years after winning the Premier League, the fall from grace has been pretty spectacular. Yeah, very quickly on the other night, poor first half, could have conceded multiple goals. But in the second half, when it came to crunch time, they actually gave it a go and they started to play with aggression and they started to create massive chances and they scored a couple of goals and the crowd were with them. And it was like, it felt like, what's happening here? Where has this been? And then, I like Gary Rowett, you know, I like him as a fella. I think he's a good, solid manager. But for me, he made a massive error of judgment. He brought on Harry Winks. And Harry Winks is public enemy number one at Leicester. The fans hate him. He's been described as poisonous all season. He swore at the fans getting on the bus the other day. When he was warming up, he was roundly booed quite viciously. His response was to clap them, which for me was a bit antagonistic. There was no need to bring him on. Jordan James might have been injured, but they had Choudhury on the bench. They had Aaron Ramsey. It felt to me like he was sort of sending a message to the fans that I'm in charge here, Gary Rowett. And it was a massive misread of the room. And suddenly the atmosphere became toxic. And lo and behold, 5 to 10 minutes later, Hull had equalised and it was all a bit of a mess again. It wasn't Harry Winks' fault, but I just felt that was a big, big mess up from Gary. So yeah, look, nightmare scenario for them. They've got to clearly get rid of most of the squad. It feels like the players, the style of the players and the style of the manager was a bit of an identity mismatch. Rowett likes working with hard-working players, industrious, no-frills approach. The Leicester players, they want the ball. They want to knock it around. I think on reflection, getting a manager in that played a different brand of football might have helped them. But look, when you can't defend and you've got no striker, you're always going to be up against it anyway. Throw into the mix a dressing room of guys that are on massive money that don't care and clearly aren't together as a group, and you've got a recipe for disaster. And I haven't even got to the ownership, who have made bad decision after bad decision after bad decision.
What happens next then, Sam? I mean, A, does Gary Rowett stick around? Will they want him to? And obviously players will be looking to leave, but that can often be easier said than done, right? Because it's going to have to be a fire sale. They're not going to get big money for a lot of these guys who've underperformed all season. They might well bounce back at the first attempt, but we've seen it before, haven't we? With big clubs who get relegated from the Championship, they actually find it pretty sticky in League One. So it's not a given that they're just going to steamroller it next season and be back with a brand new squad and ready to go for promotion back to the Premier League again.
No, it's about joined up thinking now, making some inspired decisions, probably in terms of the manager, in terms of the type of player they're going to recruit and the type of blueprint that they're going to have as a team to attack next season. Just to add a little bit more to what Clarkie said, I suppose for me as well, I was thinking about the managerial appointments across the last few years as well. You know, how many times have they got that wrong? I mean, I was quite a fan of Brendan Rodgers. Obviously, it went sour towards the end, but outside of Enzo Maresca, the Ruud van Nistelrooy appointment, there was Dean Smith briefly, wasn't there. Cifuentes after an okay season at QPR. You know, all three of these I would question, and obviously Gary Rowett as well, for the reasons that Clarkie stated. It sounds like he's not going to be there next season, and it's about finding probably younger, hungrier players to attack next season. I think a lot of these players will probably come back and star at their next clubs. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think when you get too many that have got agendas, that don't want to be there, that are on the Premier League money, that have made, you know, the decision to stay for whatever reason and not performed, I think it could be incredibly difficult. And I think it's been a terribly unmotivated dressing room in the last few weeks. But yeah, with a manager that wasn't suited probably to getting the best out of them. But you know, don't tell me they couldn't have kept more clean sheets or won more games this season with many capable players they've got in that dressing room. So I think it's just spiraled. Definitely the striker thing, I would absolutely echo, you know, poor array of strikers to choose from to try and get them out of the mire. But in terms of next year, there has to be change. Whether that will come at the top, we'll have to wait and see. But I think they have to take a large portion of the blame here, rather than obviously Gary Rowett and Marty Sifuentes, as he went before him.
Yeah. There's very clearly there's no evidence that Top is good enough to take the club forward and to make the right decisions. The combination with him and John Rudkin is deeply unpopular, and just the back catalogue of mistakes and bad calls gives me actually very little hope that they will make the right choices in order to bounce back properly. So yeah, it's a worrying time, I think, for Leicester.
Top and bottom, you might say. They host Millwall on Friday night. We'll talk about them shortly, but let's stay with the bottom of the table for now, because Adrian, you were also on duty for Blackburn against Sheffield United on Wednesday. Rovers seeing themselves safe with victory. So that Michael O'Neill gamble, I was going to say worked for everybody, maybe not Northern Ireland, but certainly for Blackburn.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely superb. The first half at Sheffield United last night, they were incredible. Absolutely fantastic. Like, the shape was perfect. They sort of set up in a nice mid-block and then waited for a loose pass. Bang, they were on them. They intercepted and they were away. And every time they turned the ball over, they looked like scoring. I was looking at some of the stats, actually, over the course of this season. Rovers have won the most tackles in the Championship. They've made the most ball recoveries and they've won the most duels. So they're out of possession work has actually been pretty brilliant this season. It's obviously just a lack of punch in attack that's been their issue. And last night they found it with the two Japanese players, Marista and Ahashi. I mean, those two led the Blades a merry dance, really. I really like Marista. I think he's got a little bit in his locker. So yeah, look, they've won 9 away games, which is testament to their organisation and spirit. Because to win away from home, Sam knows this, you need to roll up your sleeves and show some balls. And they've done that 9 times this season. So yeah, congratulations to them and to Michael O'Neill. The question is, what's he want to do now? Because I'm sure Rovers will want to keep him. Will he stick around or say, thank you very much, mission accomplished, I'm on to the next gig?
Be interesting to see. So Blackburn is safe, as are Portsmouth, despite the fact they got absolutely smashed by Coventry, who sealed the title. And then it's between Charlton and Oxford for the final relegation spot. Charlton have got 50 points, Oxford have got 44. The goal difference, not much between them, minus 13 for Charlton, minus 15 for Oxford. Oxford host Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend, whilst Charlton are at the Valley against Hull. Sam, you watched their game against Ipswich last night. I mean, we'll deal with both these teams, but we'll start with Charlton. Will they be kicking themselves after taking an early lead that they didn't get anything from the game? Or is it, you know, fair enough, it was Ipswich, they're going for promotion?
No, they will be, because they went in front inside a minute. And yeah, Nathan Jones was probably sitting there, standing there relatively comfortably for the first 10 minutes or so of the game. Ipswich were, in my opinion, better than they were at Portsmouth, despite going behind and labouring for a period in that first half. There was a little bit more movement about them, a little bit more belief. And that's probably because, you know, Charlton don't put it on teams, really. They sit in. That's their strong suit, isn't it? It's being structured without the ball, defending their box. They're not going to press really high. Portsmouth, on the other hand, do. They went for it that night and they played really front-footed football, Pompey. So that was the difference in there. And I think Ipswich were given a little bit more time to probably find a bit of rhythm and a bit of confidence. I don't think Charlton had a shot in the second half, which showed you that they didn't really have periods where you felt like they were going to get back and get the point that they required. Dykes came on at the break, and obviously there was quite a few hopeful balls in his direction, and they hoped to spring and transition, which didn't really happen. So listen, I think Charlton get the job done. I think there's a fair chance that Charlton whole game could be a draw at the weekend, which I think in their current guise as well, Hull City would probably do them both fine. Well, it's a better result for Charlton, but I think they've shown across the season that they're probably going to stay in the division. And Oxford, yeah, Sheffield Wednesday to come, but then away at Millwall on final day. Millwall facing two potentially relegated sides in their final couple. So, yeah, not a great night for Charlton, despite taking the lead. I thought Ipswich did some really nice stuff down the right-hand side in particular. Darnell Furlong got the winning goal with a brilliant daisy-cutting strike. Him and McAteer, excellent off the right. Philogene, a few moments for him off the left. I mean, this has not been a vintage Ipswich season, which we know, even if it does end in automatic promotion. And I think maybe Kieran McKenna will get a lot of praise, and rightly so, because the lack of striker, really, I think, as well, has probably cost them quite a few points, as on and Hurst sharing the burden. But I don't think either of them are a top championship quality. Again, that showed last night, of as on spurning a really good opportunity in the first half. The pick of the players at the moment, I mean, Dara O'Shea, I think, has been superb. And watching him across the last couple of weeks, even though they've stumbled, you know, over towards the line, he has been outstanding. And again, last night, a little bit at fault maybe for the opening goal. Obviously, it was Ben Johnson's wayward pass, which ultimately led to Doherty opening the scoring. But Dara O'Shea, a little bit slow to come across, but he's in outstanding form. So it's a just continuation, I think, of the season for Ipswich, not filling you with confidence on the road, liable to throw one in on occasion collectively. But I think they're probably still just about going to get it done. But a big match on the horizon. West Brom, obviously, yes, safe mathematically right now as we sit. But what's the message in that dressing room going into the next couple of games from James Morrison? Is it potentially we're going to have a few points taken off us, let's keep going, foot on the gas? Or do the players do exactly that and feel like the job is done?
Listener, this podcast was founded on honesty, if not professionalism. I've just realised my microphone isn't plugged in. I'm not at home today. I didn't plug it in properly. So if the sound is not very good, then I'm afraid that's why. Clarky's got something similar going on. But hey, you know, we're trying our best. I'm not a producer. Anyway, let's move on. Clarky, who's going to finish second in the championship? You've got Ipswich, 79 from 43. Millwall, 79 from 44. Southampton, 76 from 44. As have Millwall. Obviously, Southampton in the FA Cup this weekend before they got a big game on Tuesday night against Ipswich. Is that going to be the shootout?
Well, I think Millwall have got a brilliant chance. I really do, because they've basically just got to play two teams that are probably going to already be relegated. And that has to be 6 points in the bag for them, doesn't it? I mean, it doesn't, obviously, because this is football and you have to beat what's in front of you, and no one will roll over completely. But if they get those two wins and get to 85 points, then it heaps pressure on Ipswich Town, doesn't it, to win their games. And, you know, they've got some tricky ones, haven't they? You know, obviously, Southampton away is the biggie. West Brom away. West Brom are in form. James Morrison's done great. QPR on the last day, I mean, is a lock-in. But these next two away games will define it. And if they do slip up, then I do think that Millwall will steal in. And I worked on their game against QPR at the weekend. Goodness me, QPR definitely on the beach. But yeah, I was really impressed. A return to form, excellent teamwork. Love the wingers sort of tracking back and doing their bit. They really do dig in, the Millwall players. Ballow did that to good effect. Coburn is a massive handful for defenders at the moment. Knocking them around is quicker than you think. And they've brought in Mazu Sako. I don't know if you know much about this kid, but he's come into the midfield the last couple of games and been brilliant. Absolutely superb, picking up all the second balls, making interceptions, good legs. He's been absolutely terrific. So, yeah, they seem to have sort of found their team now. Donore with him and Negley in front, and then the two wingers, Ballow and Aziz, either side of Coburn. That, for me, is the team that he wants to pick now, game in, game out. And if that team stays fit, they've got a great chance. They really have. It's over to Ipswich. Can they hold their nerve and avoid defeat against Southampton? Because I think Southampton have got too much to do now, personally.
Yeah, that's FA Cup semi-final. Might be a bit of a distraction, dare I say, Sam, for Southampton. Are you going Millwall as well for second?
Am I going Millwall? No, I'd go Ipswich. Yeah, I agree with Clarkie, though. I think Millwall will probably win their two games. So that requires Ipswich to take, 6 points from from nine, which I think they're more than capable of doing. Yeah, the Southampton game is a very, very difficult game on the face of it. But yeah, I think you have to factor in the cup semi-final. There'll be some tired legs. Will they accept that the dream's over? I think it's inevitable there'll be a few changes before that Ipswich game. But Ipswich, like I just said, have not been perfect by any stretch away from home. They've thrown in some really under par performances. But I think they'll find a way to win one of those two away games and take care of business against QPR on final day. And that will be enough for them to cement that second position.
All right, that's the Championship done. We're going to head to League One next, where Lincoln have wrapped up the title and Cardiff have secured promotion. Sam, the two look like they're going up for months, but maybe not in the order that we thought. My inclination is to say that Cardiff will fare better in the Championship, but am I basing that on anything other than history?
I think that's exactly what you're doing, because I would maybe suggest right now that Lincoln might be better suited, got some experience, Cardiff as well, I think, of players that have got the level, but I think it's the style. Maybe it's more akin to what we're seeing in the Premier League and the Championship right now. The high-intensity pressing, the fast attacking transitions, of course, the unbelievable set-piece prowess. So, yeah, I think they could surprise a few. And there's been no let-up towards the tail end of the season. An incredible home form as well, I think, which is worth factoring in ahead of next season. And yeah, I know Cardiff have done brilliant, and we'll come on to them in a minute, but Lincoln seem to have been on this journey for a while, joined up thinking behind the scenes, going back to when the Cowley brothers were at the helm, I think, with the hierarchy, savvy appointment in terms of Skubala, allowing him to recruit to suit what they do so brilliantly well. And you know, let's also remember that they're going in on the back of, or could be going in on the back of, one of the most unbelievable unbeaten runs in recent memory. So the confidence levels as well are going to be sky high. I wouldn't imagine it's the easiest place to go when the crowd are up. Me and Clarkie have certainly been there across the last few seasons, and they support the side. And I just think the city as one will be really excited, united, and they'll have that freshness as well to attack the division. So it's been a brilliant story. I've loved that there's been such a contrast between the two sides. There is no right or wrong way to play football. And Clarkie can tell you a bit more about Cardiff. But for me, obviously, I've said so frequently as well, going down to Cardiff to cover games over the last 10 years, sometimes I knew that I was going to be watching a dire 90 minutes, that it was going to just be, and this is the squads of players that weren't particularly gifted as well. Cardiff got away with it under Neil Warnock when they had better players, of course, and they gave up a lot of the ball, and they had good wingers, and they had the set piece threat through Flint and Morrison before him, better players. I think when that squad got broken up and they still kind of stuck with playing the same way, they had some really poor sides. So dropping down into the third tier was a product of that. So really brave to go with a manager with a completely different style, to focus on the young players, to give them a platform. So I think that's been a huge success and must have thrilled the Cardiff support. It's whether they can translate it to the higher tier playing really risk and reward football.
Brian Barry Murphy deserves a lot of credit, doesn't he, Clarkie? What was he, 4 years out of managing a senior team when he took this job, and he's managed to get Cardiff promoted and Lincoln much more carefree. Cardiff, there's an awful lot of pressure there, and he stood up to it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he'd been done a great job at Manchester City. He was very popular there, highly rated. So, yeah, he's clearly a superb coach, Brian Barry Murphy. But that was the dream appointment. That's the sort of appointment Leicester City need to make. Ironically, of course, he's a former Leicester City assistant manager. So, you know, they wouldn't mind him back, that's for sure. Because Leicester have got a great academy. You know, got some excellent young players pushing and that have had game time this season. I think what they've got to do is do what Cardiff have done and give those kids a chance and make them regulars with the right manager to guide them. But yeah, look, it was doom and gloom at Cardiff. Every time you went there, it was the ground was dead. The football was stodgy and stale. And now there's new life and energy and young hunger. And it's brilliant to see, you know, that Dylan Lawler, you know, the adventurous centre-back, we saw seen him score one of the goals of the season, running through the middle of the team, an unbelievable dribble. You know, that's the freedom that he's playing with. Capacchio, Colwill, Davis, you know, loads of others as well that have really come to the fore. So it's been a brilliant season for Cardiff and for Barry Murphy. So yeah, let's onwards and upwards. They return to the second tier as a much more united club. And the reason they're more united is they've got a clear identity, a likeable manager who gives homegrown players a chance. And that is a formula that is always going to be pretty popular.
Yeah, only Peterborough fielded a younger average starting 11 than Cardiff this season. Lincoln, surprisingly, because I thought they'd be right up the higher end. Mm. Nice balance, I think, at Lincoln. They're kind of mid in that kind of table. But certainly experience in the back line, real experience there. And that leads me on to, you know, defensive players popping in with goals, chipping in with goals, not over-reliant on one or two players. I think that's been a big part of Lincoln's success throughout the season. Seven players, five or more goals. Dariqua, five goals from right back. Sonny Bradley, certainly three as well. So that's something to bear in mind going into next season. You know, there's not one talismanic striker that may be plucked from a higher level. They're going in with the essence of a team where they can hurt you from various different positions.
Also confirmed this week in League One, Port Vale's relegation. And we've known that's been coming for a while. This weekend, Exeter will be relegated if they lose and Leighton Orient don't lose and Wimbledon win. Exeter will be relegated if they draw, plus Wimbledon win, Leighton Orient win and Peterborough don't lose.
Who have Exeter got?
Away to Terry. All right. So if Burton get what? A point in that game. Yeah, well, it's going to be sticky, isn't it? I mean, it's very, very tight down there between Exeter on 48, Wimbledon 50, Leighton Orient 51, and Peterborough and Burton on 52. That's going to be fascinating this weekend in League One then. And we're going to go to League Two next. So Bromley promoted. They'll win the title if they win and MK Dons don't this weekend. Adrian, is this the best achievement in the EFL this season? National League South back in 2015 to League One next season?
Yes, phenomenal. Yeah, it's amazing. We've seen teams do it before. When I was playing, Yeovil Town did it. They went through the leagues. But Yeovil was a bigger club than Bromley, a more established sort of non-league powerhouse. Bromley never have been that. You know, when I was playing, they were nowhere near the National League. You know, always a good club, but nowhere near it. So yeah, it's been a brilliant rise. And the fact that Andy Woodman's been such a sort of fixture there, it makes it an even better story, sort of down to earth, salt of the earth kind of guy. I was at the EFL Awards on Sunday and he was getting a lot of love from everybody in the room. You know, it's clear identity, good organisation, got good characters in, set pieces again. You know, just like Lincoln, they make such a difference. And also their home form, you know, unbeaten at home. They've properly made that a fortress. But it's that solidity really for me that's done it for them. They've conceded more than two goals in a game just twice this season. So, you know, normally it's either a clean sheet or one against. Every now and again, it's two. Hardly ever. It's more than that. And if that's your defensive record, you've always got a chance of winning games. What makes it even more amazing is that away from home, against the top half, one win all season, which really shocked me when I had a look at that earlier. But it doesn't matter. They're promoted. And really and truthfully, they probably deserve the title. I think that'd be a nice sort of cherry on top of the cake for them. MK Dons look like they're definitely going up as well, but they've never really been top, have they, this season, MK Dons? I feel like Bromley deserve it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that when somebody doesn't just pinch it right at the end of the season. Sam, how do you think they'll get on next season, Bromley?
Surprise a few. I think I don't know what the budget will be, if they'll have some money to improve the squad, but yeah, I think they could start fast. I'm not sure it's a maiden season in League One, which will see them finish, you know, top half per se, but I think they could be all right. I asked him a question, Andy Woodman, the other day. He was just starting to get boozed outside his local golf club because he didn't have a game on the Saturday. He was in obviously great spirits when Notts County lost home to Barnet. That was a game, wasn't it? That meant they were ultimately definitely up. And I said, because it was off the back of Frank Lampard kind of talking about the pre-season conversations that had taken place at Coventry, what were the aspirations? And I asked Andy Woodman, you know, what was the aim? What did you think you could achieve? And he said he had a thing called Project 73, which I presume was points, which wouldn't have actually got them in the playoffs because Chesterfield have already got 74 this season. But he changed it to Project Champions, I think, when they hit top spot internally. Didn't speak about it outwardly, but yeah, obviously their target was just to go one better than what they did last year, which was finished, I think, 4 points shy. So to get in would have been a success internally. It looks like they're going to win the league now with a couple of games to go. And yeah, just to add to what Clarkie was saying, yeah, unbeaten at home. Only Cardiff and Shrewsbury have done it this century in any EFL division. So that is incredible if they go on and achieve it. 23 points from losing positions, which is far and away the most, which took me a little bit by surprise. And as Clarkie says, they're not the most of free scoring promoted sides we're ever going to see. But it's all about that structure of the side, the set piece threat, the consistency, I think, in lineup, and having two lads who know where the back of the net is. That always helps.
One that starts, one that's on the bench.
Cheek and Kabamba, 29 goals combined and four. And a lot of those are those match-winning goals that turn defeats into draws or draws into victory. So unbelievable achievement. It'll be worth having a look to see if the lowest possession team in League One and League Two whoever won the titles, because I don't imagine it's happened too often, but maybe a glimpse into the future. And a lot of teams will probably be looking to mirror their style and certainly hoping for their success in years to come.
Well, Salford and Bromley meet on Thursday tonight as we record. This weekend, MK Dons will be promoted if they beat Tranmere. If Salford don't win against Bromley, then a draw on Saturday will be enough for the Dons. Cambridge can be promoted with a win if Salford lose on Thursday, Notts County don't win and Swindon don't win. Barrow can be relegated if they lose, plus Crawley and Newport win. And Harrogate can be relegated if they lose, plus Crawley and Newport win. Permutations to predictions then, as we head toward the end of the show. Not a good week for me and you last week, Adrian. Sam got 3 points because he got Blackburn Cov as a 1-1 bang on the money. Adrian, you got one for predicting a draw between Barnsley and Bradford, and I got a big fat zero. So it might be an insurmountable lead now.
It's not an insurmountable lead at all. I'm on 65.
Keeps thinking, oh, I'm leading, doesn't
I do, because you won last week. Year. I just can't get that out of my head, can I?
Yeah. No, I'm still winning. I've led the whole season, but I've had big leads, and now I'm doing an Arsenal. This is what's happening. I've bottled this. So I'm on 65. Sam's on 62. You're basically relegated on 48, Matt.
All right. I still think that's pretty acceptable. Let's see how we get on this week then. Charlton v Hull is my championship pick. Sam as the front runner. Why not?
Yes. Go first.
He's not the front runner, he's second.
Sam, as a second place person, why can't I get my head around this? Sam, you're second, but yeah, you can go first. How about that?
Do you know what? I teased it earlier, and I'm going to have to be quite reactionary here to whatever Clarkie says, I think, considering the 3-point gap. However, I've not done it for a while. Stinks of it. 1-1.
Okay, that's interesting, because I was going to go for a draw, but it looks like we're all going for a draw. So why don't I say that Charlton will win it 1-0. Adrian?
Well, 1-1, I'd locked it in. I was desperate for you to come to me first as the leader, but you didn't. so I... Do you know what? It could get a bit sweaty for Charlton. Charlton 1, Hull 2.
Okay, interesting. All right. Well, as you are the leader, Adrian, again, you are the leader, you can go first on the League One game, which is Wigan against Wimbledon. It's a big one for Wimbledon.
Big one, isn't it? Look, they're on a terrible run at the moment, aren't they? They're sort of limping over the line. I think finally they're going to find a way to get the win that they need, the Dons. So I'm going to go for Wigan 1. I'm going to do the same score. Wigan 1, Wimbledon 2.
Okay. I also think Wimbledon will win. I'm going to say it's going to be 0-1 though. What about you, Sam?
Tactically, and also, I think it could go down to the last day. I just think, yeah, the injuries, I'm not sure how they're looking ahead of this weekend. And we're going to have been in fine form. They are going to be a little bit beachy. I think 1-1, again, I'm going down the Matt Davis Adams route of thought here with all draws, I think. 1-1, final day heroics for someone in Southwest London. Southwest London? South London?
Poor old Johnny Jackson misses out on your stag do because...
Oh, man.
Instead.
I know, man. I'm gutted.
Grimsby Swindon is the last game that I've picked. Have I gone first yet? I don't think I'm all over the place today, aren't I? You can tell I've been up since 4:45. I will say that this is going to be a 3-3 draw. Why not? Sam? Mm.
I've heard more stupid things, mate. Yeah, it was 2-2 the reverse fixture. You just can't trust Swindon at the moment. And Grimsby were my very early season fancies after I saw them play in August. So I will go for 2-2. Swindon play Chesterfield final day.
What about this weekend though, Clarky? The Ian Holloway Classico, how's it going to go?
Oh, I think he's going to get battered. I got battered a couple of times there with Southend United back in the day.
Is this a fish-related
No, it was completely unrelated to fish, but it works beautifully, doesn't it? Grimsby 3, Swindon 0. Bosh, have some of that.
Wow, okay, a proper stuffing. 3-0, crikey. Right, okay, before we get to Tweet of the Week, one more plug for the offer from our partners Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, 18 plus, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Tweet of the week to finish then. It comes from Stevenage's Jasper Pattenden, not somebody whose game I was familiar with. He said, another big night under the lights at Broadhall, exclamation mark. We keep moving forward. It's with a picture of him looking rather pensive, actually, down at the ball. He's had 158 likes. Sam, would you give him another?
I don't think so, mate. No. I'd prefer probably a shot of the crowd. I mean, is this at Quinton Stanley or is it Stevenage, just before I make another? I prefer maybe, I wouldn't go for the profile shot of myself here, but pretty standard in every other department, 6 out of 10. I will bring it. Has there ever been another Jasper? I can't think of another Jasper.
Jasper
it was Jesper Gronkier, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, not Jasper. Yeah it's a bit Jasper. Too middle class of a name for a footballer usually, isn't it? But what it is, Clarky, I think, I mean, he's gone for the brooding look. Make sure you get the tattoo in. But it's a good fishing one as well, isn't it? Because there's a lot of good performances. Mick Lee says MOM, which is annoying because it should be MOTM. But basically everybody's saying performance, performance, performance. Nick has just put a picture of Cafu. Yeah, he's got what he wanted, I think. Compliments.
He definitely got what he wanted. He was definitely fishing. What I would have an issue with is his use of Broader. Obviously, it's Broader Way, but in a previous tweet, just 2 or 3 tweets ago, he's labelled the ground Lamet. What is it? You can't flip flop between one and the other. Either you're a traditionalist, you call it Broadhall Way, or you embrace the Lamex. So that's my quibble really with Jasper. But he seems really popular, doesn't he? Good luck to him and good luck to Stevenage. By the way, we don't talk enough about Stevenage. I hope they get into the playoffs so that we can have a proper chance to talk about them, to analyse them, because this is not Bromley, but it's not far off. They should not be in the mix for promotion to the Championship, but you know, under a very likable manager, Alex Revel, they are flying and they're holding their nerve in these big high pressure games. 2-2 with Lincoln have been smashing everyone, but they didn't smash Stevenage. So I'm really proud of my old club. They're doing brilliantly.
All right, yeah, well done to Stevenage. That's where we're going to leave things for today. We'll be back next week. We were just discussing exactly when, based on Sam's weekend and some big games coming up midweek too, but we will have a show for you at some point, so keep across your preferred podcast platform for that. That'll do for today though. Thanks to Adrian, thanks to Sam, thanks to you for listening as well. Bye for now.